Welcome back to the Voices of Women Summit, where in honor of International Women's Day 2023, we are raising the voices of hundreds of women so that their messages can be heard. Your host for this session is Kimberly Crow. Kimberly is the founder of Entrepreneurs Rocket Fuel and Speakers Playhouse, as well as the creator of the Voices of Women Summits. She has another amazing guest coming right up. Take it away, Kimberly.
Bridget's heard that all day long. We need to change your name so it actually says your correct name there on your thing. I am super excited to have Bridget with me today. Bridget is my daughter. I just had the privilege of interviewing my mom on recording on the previous call, and now I have an opportunity to interview my amazing daughter, which she's probably going to take over the show for me, but she's absolutely awesome. You're going to love her to pieces, just like I do. Bridget, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So you invented the name of the title for this, and I'm not really sure what it says, but it looks like Omphaja is something that I'm not familiar with. So would you tell us a little bit about how you became an expert in Omphaja?
Mm-hmm. Right after, you'll have to tell me how you became an expert in leading up to stories that you know everything about. So this is a wonderful family story that my mom and I have, which just goes to show that we can laugh our asses off about anything. No one else will understand, but we think it's hysterical. So we were driving in the car one day and we found a license plate that said UGHOMFG, UGH, oh my fucking God. And I think it was me who said, who would let that be on a license plate, or why is that allowed to be on a license plate? Like, it's clearly a bad word. It's a cuss word. Like, I was probably 12 at the time and I was very innocent and very angel status. So, you know,
keep going.
My grandmother is on it. It says it was she who said it. Okay. So grandma says this and mom says, well, it might not be, like, you don't know. And I'm like, well, what else could it possibly be? And she goes, well, you don't know. It could be the name of their dog. And I look at her and I go, and this is a look I've perfected over the years, which is, Omphaja, in their right mind, is going around naming their dog Omphaja. That's not a real explanation. You just wanted to be like right about a possible other explanation, which leads me to another wonderful story. Some of you may not know, but I graduated in environmental management and protection. And one of the things that we understand is, as environmental people, you may or may not as attendees, is that drawing fossil fuels from the earth and then transplanting them as gas in their gas form into the ozone layer is causing some problems, such as melting of the ice caps, rising water levels, death of species, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, not to put a downer on the subject, but the loveliest ever, Kimberly Crow, who always likes to think of another explanation for things like this, thinks that it's the way that the earth cleanses its pores. So basically, all of the fossil fuel in the deposits in ground is just like a really bad case of acne. And humans are actually providing a very like beneficial action by being an exfoliant for the face of the earth. Sure, we're like putting it around in like this cloud of destruction of gas, but you know, at least our face is pimple free.
Well, I mean, it could be that the earth actually created humans to be able to remove the oil deposits from the earth. Not possible. She says it's not possible, ladies and gentlemen.
Wait. This is the look again, in case any of you missed it.
So yes, That is the look. I've seen that quite a few times over the years. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So this amazing woman is actually, so everybody knows that I love to be on stage. I love to grab the mic. When I was pregnant with Bridget, I was like, okay, I'm on stage. I actually was in a production of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. They had to extend my costume to wrap around my bigness as I was getting bigger and bigger before she was born. And so I was like, this is awesome. My daughter is going to love being on stage because she was on stage even before she was born. And then later I did force her to get on stage and she was in a lot of productions. But she wasn't like really embracing it in the way that I would like for her to embrace being on stage. So that way. Yes, exactly. And so when she would come home from an audition, I'd be like, so you auditioned for Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat. What part did you get? Did you get the narrator? And she said, I got the tap dancing corn. And she was very, very, very happy about that part. And I'm like, why is it that you want to be like in the background? Like you just want to be part of the ensemble cast. Why don't you want to be like on stage? And she was like, yeah, I really like it back here better. I don't need to be in front of the limelight. And I said, well, the limelight is where all the applause is. But I was corrected.
It's true. The limelight is where all the applause is. But not everyone is drawn to that as moths are to flame. In fact, she goes on to say, well, I tried the best that I could to like introduce you to this lifestyle, to make you love this lifestyle. You were on stage in the womb, for God's sake. And I come back with, well, yeah, I was in the dark then too. As some of you may or may not know, I am actually in the theater field right now as stage tech in the dark, controlling things in the background, making you all look very lovely. And it's where I'm happy.
So this entire event, she's been in the background making everybody look amazing. She's been running tech. She's been solving problems. She's been backstage and doing amazing things. And while we all think that the applause is for the people on the stage, she believes, and rightfully so, it could not happen without her. And so, and the tech people behind the scenes. And so she says, well, you may think the applause is about you. And we like to let you think that the applause is about you, but it's really about us. Is that right?
Because otherwise you'd be on stage, but you'd be in the dark, naked, with no music or audience. And you know, artist types don't really like that type of situation as much as they like the full lights, full sound, full costume, full audience type of situation, which is where we come in. Welcome.
See how good she would be on stage? She just doesn't care for it. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So what are your passion projects now other than Omphaja and naming a new dog that someday? What are the things that you would like to see happen in the world?
Well, I do hope to get back to my passion, which is environmentalism. I'm enjoying what I do right now very much. I'm enjoying the people and I'm enjoying the productions and I'm enjoying what I get to do and all the responsibility that I get. But I do love the idea of going back one day and changing the world for the better and making it so that more species are safe and humans can live more in harmony with the nature around them rather than pulling and pulling from it because, you know, probably we could live on another planet at some point.
We got to take care of this home. It's the only one we have. Is that right?
Yeah, I agree with that much.
I have to agree with that as well. You're doing good in the world, all kinds of different ways. In fact, when you were in San Luis Obispo, you worked on the dunes. You had this really, really tough job where you had to work on the beach every day. Tell us about that.
Well, it was really tough. I will have you know. she mocks, but I'd like to see her lug 500 bales of hay back and forth across the sand dunes. But yes, it was a restoration job. It was an environmental job and it was on the beach and I loved it. It was a job, dedicated to revegetating parts of, sand dunes habitat because it was a recreational area and people were driving 4x4s and dune buggies and stuff on it all the time, had been for decades. And all of the running of the tires and everything was starting to kick up a bunch of dust that was actually causing a health problem for some of the surrounding cities. So the solution was to vegetate some of the areas, because vegetation is a natural buffer for that kind of thing. It catches the dirt, it puts it back down, and it keeps it there. So what we did was we would cordon off parts of the dunes, and then we would cover the entire area in straw. And then so that would give all of the seeds and plant seedlings that we would be planting like a good haven to stay, so they wouldn't just get blown away in the wind. And then we would plant thousands of already grown seedlings that we'd been working on in our greenhouse for a while. And then once we had done that, we would toss free seeds all over the area so that they would catch in the straw, and then that they would grow there as well. But of course, we wouldn't be able to grow in a greenhouse and plant millions upon millions of plants. So we started a few, hoped that they survived, and we just seeded the millions of others. And it works very well. If any of you are ever in the proximity of the Oceano Dunes, it's actually being closed down from driving, which is unfortunate, but unfortunate for the people who have been driving on it for decades, fortunate for many native species in the area. But like I said, I'd love if we could find a way to work in harmony, but that's how it's going for now. I did have a funny story though about one time where one of our plants that we'd planted, we grew them in these little conical pots for their first couple months of life. And then we took them out, or we were supposed to take them out of these pots before we put them in the ground. This message did not get through to some people, but there was one case. I'll tell you that the plants can do just fine in that situation, because there was one case where we found one of these big bush plants that had clearly been growing from one of the projects that we'd done 5 or 6 years ago, and it had burst out of its pot, and it was still like barely holding on around the very base of the plant, but like the roots were as thick as the pot was and growing out in all directions, and the bush was 10 feet high, and it was doing just fine. So
wow,
it was very funny. So everybody knows the Hulk and to Hulk out, and in this particular case it was a lupin plant, which we shortened to luch for our shorthand purposes. So instead of hulking out, we then were luching out for the rest of the summer, the season.
Got it. Awesome. All right. So if somebody was thinking about going into environmental sciences and saving the world, where would you recommend that they start? What are some small actions they can take in order to really make an impact?
There are a lot of things that you can do. And I came across one time at Earth Fair that my mom and I went to one time, which is another funny story attached to it. But one of the booths was a policy booth, or like a program booth, like very similar to the people that come on to Voices of Women and speak. They had a program going that was one-to-one, which is if you can make one change for one lifetime, the rest of your lifetime, that would be more significant than making multiple changes and not being able to keep up with any of them. And they gave a few options, but one of the ones that stuck with me the most is don't use plastic straws, just ever. Like, don't use plastic straws. And I know that's really hard. Like, we go to get our food from the takeout and they've already handed us 10 plastic straws, and it's understandable that it's not entirely possible sometimes, but if you're thinking about it and you're cognizant of it, then you're like, well, I do have this metal straw that I keep around with me, or I have a case that I keep in my car with metal straws. And if there was ever a situation in which I needed a straw, instead of trying to find a plastic one, I'll just use that one. So that's another great, that's one great example, because plastic straws are actually the second most common litter item found all over the world, but especially on beaches. And the reason is because they're so small and they're so light, they get picked up by the wind in landfills all the time and end up on the beaches.
Wow. Okay. So if I was to decide that I would not ever use a straw, but I had to previously been a person that uses straws every single day, if I went for my whole lifetime, 70 years without using a single straw, I would remove 25,550 straws from circulation. That's significant, I think.
Very much so. Yeah. And if there are 7 billion people on this planet, that number is increasing every day. And if 0.00001% of those did that, that's an even more significant number.
That's a really good point. So what do we do if we go to a restaurant and they just put a straw down on the table and it's wrapped in plastic? Can we tell them, like, we don't need this, we would like for you to recycle it? Or do we just, like, leave it on the table or hope for the best?
I've done a lot of things in that situation because it just happens. It just does. I've left it on the table, but as I've worked as a waitress in the past, and I know that a lot of the time those get thrown out anyway because they're technically contaminated and you're not allowed to put them back into circulation. One thing you can do is take them yourself and use them on your, like, on your own in another scenario where you might use yet another plastic straw, but you can use this one instead. I'm sure there's others, but those are the two examples.
Those are great suggestions. I can definitely do that instead. And Marilyn put in the chat box, and I do agree, it's they're not supposed to recycle it. There's probably food protections and everything that if they put it back into circulation, that can be move disease around or whatever. But if you take it with you and then you have need of a straw, then you already have one that would have been thrown away. Instead of using a new one, you would be able to use that one. So there is a term called reuse, reuse, recycle, or something like that. Tell us what that is.
Reduce, reuse, recycle. And there's a reason that it's actually in that order. A lot of people know the green triangle with the arrows and reduce, reuse, recycle. A lot of people are familiar.
I didn't even know what the three words were. I just knew one of them.
A lot of people are familiar in the way that we are familiar with that there are elements in the world. We couldn't tell you what they are, but
okay, let's just move on.
Or trigonometry is an example that mom likes to use a lot. No one else knows what trigonometry is, but it exists and the internet knows how to use it. Anyway, so reduce, reuse, recycle. There's actually a reason it's in that order. Reduce is actually the most effective method to reducing, to prevent waste in the world. Because if you just don't use it, for example, if you don't use a straw because you're using a metal straw, then you're not even producing the waste in the first place. Reuse is the second one. I actually get a lot of my clothes from secondhand stores, from consignment shops. It's a policy of mine that I've adopted, and I love it because it's there's so many options to choose from. It's eclectic, it's cheap, and it's a great way to find really great gems. It sometimes doesn't work out, but you know, sometimes neither does going to the mall and shopping.
Valid point. That's a valid point. Yeah.
I will say that my mother's closet counts as secondhand. It counts. I've used it and it counts. So just so everybody knows.
I consider that a compliment. If my younger daughter is stealing my clothes, then it means that I'm hip. Is that right?
You're not allowed to say hip anymore, but... yes, it does in fact mean that you're hip. My mom has great taste. I've just learned that I'm a water while she's an air. So maybe we shouldn't be exchanging clothes as much as we are, but you know, she has great taste. She has great taste in jewelry and in daughters. So, you know, you can't go wrong.
I do. I have great taste in daughters and mothers. And your mother, your grandmother has some good taste in clothes. I've seen you borrow from her closet as well.
I have on several occasions borrowed from my grandmother's closet. In fact, all day today, this that you see here is actually not how I like to be for the majority of the day. One of the great benefits of remaining in the background in the black where nobody can see you is you can wear comfy stuff. So I was actually wearing comfy stuff like 20 minutes ago before I put all of this illusion on. And that comfy stuff included several things from my grandmother. So, there you go.
All right. Awesome.
Those never felt so good.
All right. So we did reduce, we did reuse. And then what about recycle? Tell us about, you had something really fascinating. Like some of us that are not environmental sciences majors, we don't know, like when we're about to throw something away and it's a pizza box or we don't know which bin to put it in. Can you help us figure out the bins a little bit more?
Sure thing. So that's actually a great question, because landfills are most stuff, but recycling plants, a vast majority of effort gets put into separating out everything that goes to recycling. So anything you put into a blue recycling bin gets looked at theoretically by several people who are all pulling things into different containers. Like there, it's going along a conveyor belt and people are grabbing the glass, they're grabbing the cardboard, they're grabbing the metal, they're grabbing like all of the things that they know go into these particular piles to be recycled. So a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of jobs is actually invested into that. A pizza box is actually an example of something that cannot be recycled. I know it's cardboard, but it is it has food items on it. Anything that will rot, anything that will decompose like that, or not, I guess everything would decompose at some point, but anything that would be food and rotting is not technically recyclable. But if you have like a glass bottle and you wash it out, that is entirely recyclable. Same with plastic milk cartons and things like that. So if you are in doubt, recycle it, because somebody's going to look at it. Somebody's going to put it into the right bin. And if that bin is the landfill, then all you've wasted is putting it into this bin instead of this bin.
Okay. So if in doubt, put it in the blue bin. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, you've heard it first here, ladies and gentlemen. That's what you got to do. What about the green bin? There's a green bin that's for landscaping. Tell us what can go in there and what can't.
So lots of the green bins actually have like a really cool diagram on them, which tell you what does and does not go in the green bin, because a lot of people have this question. Your landscapers will use it for all of the yard waste. That's actually a really great thing to go in the green bin. Food waste can go in there, but it's a little bit more tricky. I believe it's things like peels and like dryer compostables are allowed to go into the green bins. Crushed eggshells, for some reason you have to crush them, but I mean, they would get crushed anyway, so you can or cannot. Eggshells can go into the green bin, but something like the meat part of a banana, or meat actually, could not go into a green bin.
All right. Speaking of meat, you actually decided several years ago to become a vegetarian yourself, or a pescatarian. Can you tell us a little bit about how that interacts with what you're describing here?
Sure. So basically I made my own decision. I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. But I watched a documentary back when I was in high school, which went through a lot of what happens when mass production of food happens. So especially in regards to animals, there are plenty of issues that go along with the growth of crops, including pesticides, including herbicides, including monocultures, including groundwater treatment and everything like that. But gotta eat something. And there's several other issues that go along with live animal livestocking. So for example, chickens often get shoved into like three chickens into a 1 square foot space. And when they're baby chicks, it's even more dense. And since they're so dense and since they're so stressed all the time, they have their nails and their beaks cut, blunted, so that they can't hurt each other. They have their wings clipped and several other things like that. If you're talking about cows, there's a lot to do with the diet that they're fed, the hormones that they're getting, the antibiotics that they're getting, the methane that gets released when there's so many cows in one area. Methane is actually one of the most harmful atmospheric gases, pollutants. And in the case of, I'm trying to think of something else, probably like pigs or goats, there's similar issues. I have actually eaten meat since becoming pescatarian, vegetarian. And it was because I worked on an organic ranch and they grew, they raised cows there, and the cows moved from pasture to pasture to pasture every day, which is a great way to, one, keep down any invasive species in the area, and it kind of trods them in and then makes all of the native species have a chance to flourish. It's a process called eco, I'm not going to remember this, but it's like eco dragging or something like that. Anyway, so they move from pasture to pasture to pasture. Their view is of the ocean in Santa Barbara.
I'm sure they care deeply about this view. This is a great view, right? They're like, I got beachfront property.
The cows maybe don't care so much, but they're breathing this fresh, amazing air. If they wanted to, if they decided in their little cow brains to look out at the ocean, they could. They're moving from pasture to pasture to pasture. There were no antibiotics. I met the cows. They were very happy. It seemed very happy with life. And in that case, I did eat Swanton Pacific Ranch, which is the ranch that I worked at, beef, a fact that my very carnivorous father will never let me live down.
All right, fair enough. Although I think if I met a cow, I might think twice about eating it afterwards. It's sort of like once you have a pet, then you can't eat it, I don't think.
A very famous scene from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy would fly in the face of that scene.
You're right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we are at time. Before we let you go, though, Bridget, any words of wisdom you have for our audience?
Do what you love. Do what feels right. Do what makes you wake up in the day and think, yeah, I did a couple things that I agree with still today. And do a couple things that maybe you don't agree with anymore. But I ascribe to, in part, in my beliefs, Wiccanism, and one of the most amazing things that I've learned from them is, as long as ye harm none, do as ye will.
As long as ye harm none, do as ye will. All right, words to live by. Everybody, this has been Bridget Hobscheid. She is an amazing human being in her own right. I'm delighted that she was willing to come on and share the spotlight with me. Thank you very much for the hearts and the love. You guys have been fantastic. We'll see you back at the bottom of the hour. I'm Kimberly Crow. I don't know if we have an outro.
We can.
No, sorry. It's okay. And my tech host today was Bridget, and she's also my guest. So it wasn't right that I made her do that, but it's totally fine.
Wait, I can do it. I can do it.
You can do it. All right, great. We're going to get an outro as well. Then we can dance on out of here. Oh, Marilyn said her Zoom crashed four times. We have just been like, we're not going to let the Zoom gods defeat us today. We're not. Bridget does not have a free gift. Her free gift is her smile for all of you all. Unless you do you have anything that you would recommend people like check out a website or anything like that?
Thank you for joining us. Nope, I do not.
Okay, cool. We gotta go.
For another amazing session of the Voices of Women. Okay, Zoom doesn't like it. Bye, everybody.